the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Len, I thought this was number 80. It's actually number 79 here on the CBP Media Network. How are you doing?
Let's do one right after. So we'll be.
I don't think so. You know, Monday Night Football's on. Yeah, I spend a lot of time talking to you and with you, and you know, it's not that I don't
never
like
enough, time spent right?
together. I do, but yeah, you know, it's just I'd rather watch Saquon tonight. He's back from the dead this year after a couple of years of injuries. Anyway, Len,
what are you doing watching the Woke League?
What do you mean? What are you saying?
Just dish it. Let's do another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, all part of the CBP Media Network. And we're going to reach number 80. Just, you know, the same thing we reached 79. We're doing
it next week. We did three episodes last week. We got two this week. The last thing I need is another, you know, hour and a half plus God knows how long it'll take afterwards when we answer questions. Like, you know how many comments I got last week in my DMs about what constitutes a sport, by the way? F1. Today I sent out a tweet too. Like, I forgot about the whole sports thing from the end of the show last week, and someone asked me if I thought chess was a sport. I don't.
No. Yeah. It's generally like it's competition between physical competition between, two people or teams, and there's got to be some defined goal, time or goals or whatever the fuck it is. That would be my general consensus if it's a sport or not.
We'll talk about this more after the show.
What
do you want to do?
We have to.
Do you want to do housekeeping or do you want to do sponsors first?
I'll leave it up to you.
Why don't you do the lead and read, since we have a special guest for our presenting sponsor read. Do the lead and read first, and then we'll bring in the presenting sponsor conciliary right after that.
So our first sponsor for today's show is Ledin, and it's a great place to park your Bitcoin or USDC and earn some interest. And open up an account with our referral code below. And if you fund your Ledin account with 150,000 sats or 75 USDC, keep it on your platform for 15 consecutive days, and Ledin is going to gift you 10 USDC added to your Ledin account. No questions asked. So that's a great place to earn some interest on your BTC or USDC. And if you do have a lot of Bitcoin and also some bills associated with that, because you purchased a lot of Bitcoin, have no more dry powder to pay your bills, why not borrow against your Bitcoin? You can put your Bitcoin on Ledin and use that as collateral. 50% loan to value, you're good to go. Ledin will give you the money and you can pay off your bills. Also, if you do believe that the market is trending upwards and you think that the price of Bitcoin is going to be mooning, you could use the B2X option where you could double up your Bitcoin stack. And if you do it right, time it by putting in the money early and then pulling it when it gets very, very high. Well, you've earned yourself some more Bitcoin simply by using the B2X option and timing the market correctly. And the last thing Ledin offers is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, industry first, not available everywhere though. So make sure if you do want to take advantage of this, check their website where they're offering this. And while you're there, might as well check the interest rates and for the savings and borrowing accounts, because they change on a month-to-month basis.
Unbelievable. So Ledin is one sponsor of the show. Now, we've been with our other sponsor for a lot longer. They're our sort of main squeeze, as it were. And the presenting sponsor this week and every week, Len, ShakePay. We've got Carlo Campisi here, who's added his Twitter handle to his StreamYard name in the last 30 seconds since we were talking to him before the show. He definitely didn't have it in there.
I did have it in there.
Did you? I don't remember. Tell us a little bit about your platform there, sir.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Yeah, ShakePay, the easiest and quickest way to get Bitcoin in Canada. I think that's, you know, the main value proposition is like demystifying buying Bitcoin. That's right. Flex that swag. Love it. Oh, that's the custom sweaters, eh? I never saw the final.
They look great.
Yeah. Oh, those are really nice. And I'm so glad you guys kept one inside for me. So happy. ShakePay been around since 2015. Get started in minutes. You know, buy your first bit in Bitcoin in seconds. E-transfers like lightning fast. I think we're, you know, known for how quick we respond. Customer success, we're really proud of like how fast we're responsive and deal with with you know, any customer questions or feedback on a regular basis. We have our Discord group. We have, you know, we're present on Reddit. We're funny on Twitter. And then besides that, our product is really you know, fun and easy to use. I mean, we've got shaking sats, shake your phone, get free sats every day, do it for 365 days. You max out at 1,000 free sats a day. Joey, what are you at?
I'm at 480 something right now, I think.
Ooh,
Lena, my wife just lost a 750 day streak like 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
No, did you guys see we came out with the Comma Club merch?
We haven't talked about it. Tell people about that.
Yeah, so we're basically you know, we developed like this so Kate, who runs our merch team, she's designing merch for people who hit milestones in their shaking sats streaks, right? So 1,000, we had our first few shakers to reach 1,000 days streak. I think we're at 3 or 4 of them, and they get like a custom blazer, like a bomber jacket with patches, the OG logo, you know, a bunch of other like unique stuff. And then you'll get 365. I think there's some swag that's going to come out for people who get their 1 year streak. So Joey, you retroactively have to reach out. Like, hey.
I gotta stay on the streak, because if I lose it before the swag comes out, this one thing we found out the hard way. Okay, no matter how much ShakePay likes to show sponsors us, we don't get any special treatment at all. Okay, I didn't get.
We got our swag on our show.
We got our swag pack from ShakePay. It was a hat I already had because I asked for it like 2 years ago. And I think a t-shirt I also already had. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Len. Can you show me that sweater again? I'm certain it had ShakePay logo on it.
I didn't get one of those shirts.
You know what? Yeah, that I have. And I never I didn't even keep one for myself.
We didn't keep any. These are all going to people who are supporters of the show. Supporters of the app and the ShakePay mission. We're not keeping anything. It's all for the cause, man.
Hey, but your goodness is spilleth over. I mean, we can't control that. What else does ShakePay do? We have our wonderful Bitcoin cashback card. So you get 2% cashback on all your spending. Charge your card, whatever CAD you have in your CAD wallet in the app is also used for spending on your ShakePay card that you could upload to your wallet, either iOS or Android. And 2% cash back on everything. And then you get into a squad. Squads are a way for us to like turn something that would be typically, you know, single player, which is spending your money, to multiplayer and join a team of people. And every purchase you have alongside your squad every day, you get 42 extra sats. So if you're four people in a squad and you all use your card once that day, 42 sats times 4, each of you deposited in your Bitcoin wallet as a sat reward for being in a squad and using your card. Oh, ShakePay, Billy D. Williams. Yeah, man, that is a huge ShakePay.
Seven bills,
man.
That ain't bad.
That is huge. One thing, we don't participate in ShakePay as ShakePay employees, but I'm glad that everyone else gets to participate in that. So for those of you who don't know what ShakePay is, it's like a little mini lottery on your card. So, you know, you sort of by chance can get the purchase paid anyone at any point. Could be a coffee or could be whatever Billy D. Williams paid bots for $700. I don't know. But so that's ShakePay. It's just an extra perk. I don't think any other company in the world is doing that. So that's another, you know, we just want to get as many people excited about Bitcoin as we are. And we think that these rewards are just like the funnest way to do that.
They crush. Tell us about ShakePay Earn. This is the flavor of the week here. Everyone talking about Earn. When we talk about Earn on the show, the wait list, obviously the contest tonight, which we'll get to at some point later on, who's got the highest rank on the Earn wait list. Tell us about this thing. This is big. I like this a lot. So tell me about this.
So we want to get, you know, Canadians more comfortable with holding CAD, you know, and like being able to, you know, in ShakePay and being able to have that, you know, sort of yield on their sort of investment, on their holdings. And essentially it's a marketing budget for us to, you know, we're asking people to change their habits, to get eventually comfortable enough to, you know, have some of their portfolio in Bitcoin. And, you know, not everyone is, you know, ready to take the leap and buy their Bitcoin or buy Bitcoin, you know, the moment that they realize that the money's broken. And so how do we get closer to those people? Well, you know, there's something that we're doing that's kind of targeting inflation with this sort of earn program. And that's, you know, up to $1,000 into your ShakePay CAD wallet and gives you 4% APR deposited into APR deposit in Bitcoin deposited into your Bitcoin wallet every week. So that's, you know, that's our way of like encouraging people to, you know, like be comfortable in the ShakePay ecosystem to do daily transactions, either with their card or purchasing Bitcoin or using the DCA feature. It's just strategy that we employed. And so far the beta group that we've been using that has been using it has been like response has been really positive on it. And the wait list, I mean, you guys are familiar with the wait list, right? We've used the wait list a couple of times. It's a way for us to sort of one, test appetite for a new product, to make sure that we're able to service, like, you know, we have a million accounts at ShakePay. Launching something new is always, you know, you always want to like release it in tranches. And so this gives us a way to, you know, not be the ones to arbitrarily decide who gets to get access to it first. And also gives us a little bit of like feedback, like sets up that feedback loop from customers who are wanting to have access to this product first. It gives us a really good signal of what the appetite for it is. The wait list, you guys can read about it, but basically the more CAD you leave in your wallet or invite friends to use it, you get more points. The more points you have, the higher up on the wait list you are, and the higher up on the wait list you are, the sooner you will get the access to earn. And those first few months for people who get the wait list, get on the top of the wait list, will have a higher yield. I think it's 8% for the first 3 months for the first batch of people on the wait list, and then 7, 6, 5, all the way to 4, and then 4 is the cutoff. So after 3 months, everyone falls back down to 4%, and those first 3 months are kind of like a promotion within the promotion.
Okay. The wait list is dynamic. It's not static. It's always changing. Correct. That's what people are asking about that. So if you're on a wait list and you find that you're going down, it's just because it's a dynamic wait list. That's the reason why. So nothing is wrong with the system. It's just that's the way the system is operating.
Well, yeah, and it's because other people are doing
more
things
committed.
To get points.
No,
yeah.
No, just say they're more committed. It's looking at you, better, Rocks, in the chat. People. Why you keep dropping down the list? They're better and more committed. That's all there is to it. Okay, cool.
And that, my friends, is sport.
for the people in the back on the yield side, you guys are doing this out of your marketing budget. You're paying this. Okay. That's
well. So here's the thing. Everything we do is out of our marketing budget on the reward side, because we don't put the billboard on the side of the highway. We're not in Times Square. We're not on center ice at the Habs, right? We're basically dedicating the vast majority of our marketing budget into the hands of our users because of this philosophy that like, I know you guys know, because you do this every day and you're on a podcast and you're preaching the good word. Habit change takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort. And, you know, you might need 3 touch points to start saying, hey, I think this Bitcoin thing makes sense to me. Someone else might need 15. And so along the way, right, when we are rewarding customers for their loyalty, it creates this sort of, a country of believers, right, ambassadors that are going to go out there and speak the good word, because, you know, our end goal is to have every Canadian have some Bitcoin in their pocket at some point or another. And, you know, whether it's with ShakePay or not, we're going to be like, you know, like a benefactor, and we all would be a benefactor of that reality. So it's a little investment to get us closer to our mission.
I like it. Len, we usually ask Carlo before he goes, we'll ask him today, we'll put him on the spot. We usually ask Carlo like in Twitter DMs, hastily crafted Twitter DMs at like 6:30 a.m. if he's good with a contest that we've both already agreed we're going to do regardless of what he says. And so far we've been batting 1,000. So we're going to give away 6 shirts today. What is that? How many shirts did we get? 24, 25? I forget. What was the number?
I think it was 24.
Okay, 24.
So 5 are gone already.
So we gave away 5. We're giving away 6 today. 5 highest wait list and the biggest jump from last week in the wait list. So that leaves us with about 11 if my math is correct. 12, if my math is correct. So next week, Carlo, what if we give away three more?
Putting it to spot again.
Yeah, what if we give away three more to the three people with the highest Shake paid single transaction? Does that sound all right?
Within a week.
That's a little bit unfair. That's a little bit unfair because it's out of their control. Paid.
Now we're not batting 1,000 anymore, Len. That really didn't well, go the way I just thought don't, it was going to
hey,
go.
Joey, I just know. Don't think it's a good, I just don't think it's an equitable.
I have to think of a contest. I kind of like the highest Shake paid thing, but we got to think about it.
We'll do this behind the scenes, Joey.
Anyone who got Shake paid, and then you pick like three, right, from people who
randoms,
got Shake paid.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, three randoms.
But how many people get Shake paid generally in a day or a week? Like, what's the number we're going to be looking at here for overall? Number of contestants. Is it going to be like a heck of a lot?
No, I don't know. I don't know the algorithm. Like, you know, what the number is. It's like people. If you know, 1,000 people spend their card in a second, then there'll be a couple of Shake paids that happen in that.
Okay,
moment,
why don't we do this? Here we got a couple of good comments in the chat here. Len, why don't we give away six more next week then? Three highest and three lowest Shake pays.
I like the lowest one. I really like the lowest one.
Let's do both.
We did a lowest one campaign, and it worked out really well. Shamelessly,
we want you to spend money in the Shake Pay app, okay? And so does Carlo. He may not say it, but he wants that too. We all want
it. I say it.
Yeah, I mean, so we should just do three highest, three lowest. We gave away six this week. Let's give away six more next week.
That's the kind of generosity we're looking for here. Good stuff.
Okay. We're doing it.
And commentary. Right, I don't see the comments, but
it's in there. I don't know, Len. Do we have anything else for this man, or can we let him go to enjoy the rest of his night? I'm not sure.
He's gonna stick around for the whole show. What are you talking about?
You want to make him do the A block? It's not in the Google Calendar. That's for sure. Carlo, one other thing before you go. There's a couple people in the chat who are saying they really appreciate all the hard work Kate does. You got a lot of love for Kate in the chat here. So
Kate is our merch manager. I will cut out the rest of this video and just edit this one part and send it to her.
Great. Carlo,
guys,
that's it, buddy. Yeah. I want a closing words here. Final comment.
Say thank you. You guys are doing great work, and always happy to, I know this was a week delayed here. I was supposed to come on last week or 2 weeks ago, but thank you for putting up with my busy, conflicting life. And always glad to make an appearance. You guys
are waiting for the election results. So that's why we were a little bit late today.
I was very nervous. I was going to leave the country if it went another way.
All right. Thanks, guys. Carlo. We appreciate it, brother. Take care of yourself. All right.
Thank you very much, guys. Take it easy.
Cheers.
All the best. Bye.
Very good, Len. Always good to see Carlo. What a great guy. If you haven't met Carlo at a Shake Pay meetup yet, you got to make a point of meeting him. Also, Carlo always has a neat pair of shoes on. He's always wearing a pair of shoes I've never seen before every time I've met him so far. So that's a plus. Well, Len, we're not going to do the contest just yet. We will do it later in the show. So reminder, I'll put up a tweet. I'll write the tweet on the show. Shamelessly here, I'm going to be pulling my phone out during the program, as I am keen to do most of the weeks that we do this program. I'll write the tweet. You put in where you are on the wait list, dear listener or viewer. I guess you have to be a viewer for this to work. So if you're a listener, come to the live chat next week. You might get, notified of these contests a little earlier. And then also, I'm not going to look for last week's tweet. You guys know where the tweet is, or like you can search my profile for the tweet. If you were on the thread last week with your queue position and you think you made a big jump, send in your new position. And all six will get a shirt, the five highest and the biggest jump. Only downside, of course, you have to dox to Len your mailing address. But I mean, we won't give it out. So that's the only guarantee I can make. Do you have anything else you want to say before we get started, or are we good?
Yeah, actually I do. So number one, if you are listening to us and not listening to us on Fountain, please listen to us on Fountain, but not just us, other shows. You're going to be earning Satoshis as you listen to podcasts. Check it out. It's a great app built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. That's number one. Number two, if anybody out there knows anybody that's accepting donations, what's going on in the Maritimes and in Newfoundland and Labrador, I would love to send what I earned through listening, and maybe what we earned for the show, we'll send it off to the people over there that just need it. So I know of nobody that's accepting Bitcoin donations for people over there in the Maritimes, because it's been really rough over there given what's going on with the weather circumstances. Joey, have you heard of anything along these lines? Because I'm just
I haven't
out and I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, I haven't. I wish, man. I think it'd be a great cause. If you're a maritime Bitcoiner or even potentially a Quebecois Bitcoiner who knows somebody who is running something like this, let us know. We can redirect our fountain sats to that cause for we're doing 2 weeks at a time, usually 2 or 3 weeks at a time, something like that.
We'll do whatever. I just accumulated a bunch and then waiting for a good cause, and I think this is one that constitutes as one, and I got a little bit of a backlog that I just want to get rid of and hopefully improve some people's lives in the process.
It's for sure
over there, and that's it for the stuff off my list here. I do have the price of Bitcoin in Canadian dollars if you have yours in American sitting handy.
Why don't you go ahead and tell me
Canadian dollars. $26,322 in Canadian dollars. I was trying to delay it as much as possible.
I got $19,169 in USD, which I'm sure we'll talk about. The value. What is the value of a US dollar these days? It's a little different than it was 24 hours ago. That's for sure. We'll talk about that. This program, along with a bunch more stuff. Len, let's get into it. What's in the A block, brother?
We'll talk about the US economy as we do every week. So we'll lead things off with yet another hike by the Fed this past week. And the hike was 475 basis points. And if you're doing the math, the interest rates over there are now sitting at 3.25%. And there are still projections that the Fed could be as high as 4.6% by the end of 2023. So if all projections remain true, there will not be many aggressive rate hikes in 2023 compared to 2022. And to put things in perspective, as I mentioned, now we're sitting at 3.25%. We started off 2022 at 0.25, so quite a big jump since the beginning of this year. So 2022 was marred with rapid and aggressive rate hikes. One thing to note, everything going forward is still just a projection. That's all we can say they are. They're not really, can't really forecast that far ahead, as these are all numbers, the internal, external variables. It could really impact things. This is not an exact science, so who the fuck knows what the hell's going on. But really what is happening, there's a lot of manipulation in the system that is already highly manipulated. The numbers, up until now, they've been distorted. They've been distorted for decades, and this has been multiplied in the last 2+ years. And funny enough, we got word from the U.S. Secretary, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, and she's saying that a 2% inflation target may not be met in 2023. Let's look at the word may and replace it with will not and cannot, because that's fucking more accurate assessment of what's going to happen moving forward. So now, as I mentioned, their interest rates are sitting 3.25 versus 0.25 versus earlier this year. So let's examine what is the impact of this very aggressive rate hikes, series of rate hikes that took place this year. The expense paid out on interest for the U.S. public debt, it's now risen to $716 billion over the past year. This is a record high, and this should come as no shock. We talk about this quite often. And given how things are playing out, it's projected that this is going to be the largest line item in the federal budget once it surpasses Social Security. And for reference, in the 2021 budget, it shows that Social Security was $1.2 trillion. That's a large number, but it's not growing at the same pace as the expense on the interest of the debt. And who's to blame for all this mess? And if you listen to Senator Elizabeth Warren, she believes that it's Jerome Powell, that he's the problem and the one that orchestrated all this thing. And he's responsible for policy that would throw millions of Americans out of work, according to Senator Warren. And there may be some truth to what she's saying there, but really not all the blame has to be laid on one person. It's got to be shared blame here from a lot of people, including herself, the party she's running under, the opposition party, the majority of elected officials too in the past 50 years. There's a lot of people that should be accepting blame here. And how bad did everybody fuck up? Let's look at the bond market. And this is once the proud fortress that you could park your money with confidence. The U.S. bond market is on pace for the worst year in history with a loss of 13.8% entering the year. The 2.9% decline for bonds in 1994 was the largest. So like we fucking crippled it, that number. So, but not to be outdone, on a global level, it's even worse. And it's being reported by the Bank of America that in 2022, global bonds are on course for having the greatest losses since 1949. And that was at a time when the USA was ushering the Marshall Plan. For those who are unaware, that's when the United States was trying to help rebuild most of the world after the war, and there's a lot of money being poured out of United States at that time. So bond outflow right now they're going up. It's really, really high. Not an all-time high, but still it's extremely hard. And it's a lot of people out there, a lot of businesses, a lot of everybody, there's a desire to hold cash. And more specifically, the strongest shitcoin known as the US dollar. But back to the US, using the gold standard of the 60-40 portfolio, and that's US stocks to bonds ratio, holding on to this in 2022 is a disaster. If you did that, you're down 19.3% in this year of 2022. And this is on pace to become the second worst year in history after 1931. If I recall correctly, 1931 was not really a stellar year for the economy, just after the Great Recession over there. So let's look at the equities right now. S&P 500 last week fell 1.7%. This was on Friday. And this drop that happened on one day is 1.7%. It's the 30th time that the market has dropped between 1% and 2%. This is the most since 2008. In that time, we had 34 drops between 1% and 2%. But we're only at September 26th. So there's a bunch more trading days. We could crush that 2008 number. I checked today, unfortunately, we didn't drop between 1% and 2%, so it's still stuck at 30 days. So it is what it is. And to date, some $13 trillion of wealth was wiped out in the stock market. $13 trillion. It's an incredible number. If you think about that, just by market cap, that's five apples gone like that. Five Apple companies gone. Mm. And on to housing. And I'm not sure if you saw this. This is a video clip that was floating around Twitter, Joey. And it was the House Financial Services Committee. They came up with some doozies over there where Jamie Dimon was asking members to reduce regulation to allow the rollout for mortgages, more mortgages for people who are currently struggling to obtain mortgages. They want to give out more mortgages at a time when the housing market's going down. Perhaps, and they're even contemplating 50-year mortgages. This could be in the mix. 50 fucking years, Joey. Shaking my head. If we're keeping score here, the medium home price in September 2022 was $337,000. A 30-year mortgage with the rates of 2.86%. The total paid over 30 years would be $502,000, which ain't bad. Now, September 22, the median home price is $440,000. 30-year mortgage, 6.47%. Total paid over 30 years, $998,000. Just 2K shy of a million. It's a lot of fucking interest paid for the same median price of a home that was just there 2 years ago. And we also have the House Financial Services Committee, another one. There was another great clip that came out. And this is just showing that it's an old boys club. And what I'm referring to is the congressional staffers, SEC employees, some of whom end up getting jobs with big banks. I'm not sure if you saw this clip, Joey, but at the end, it looked like one of the staffers was getting a job with the big bank with the people that they were investigating, that they're talking to. And it just goes to show you, in the end, it was just saying they were fucking laughing. It was just a joke. And it's because it's a revolving door over there. People come in to the SEC, people come there to work for the congressional staff, and then they move on to big banks. And you know what? They're going to help out their friends, right? They're not going to hurt their friends. This is the way it always works. They're fucking laughing. But it's not just a joke, Joey. They're just fucking laughing at everybody that because we are just continually paying into this. It's just a fucking disgrace. Do they have our best interest in mind? We could even look at the Disclose Act. Not sure if you heard about this one, Joey. It's a federal campaign finance reform bill. It's been introduced in the Congress since 2010. This bill would amend the Federal Election Campaign Act of 1971 to provide for faster and greater public disclosure of campaign spending to combat the use of so-called dark money. Well, senators voted to block it this past week. 49 Republicans said no to it. What the fuck? We can't get full disclosure. Give me a fucking break. How's this for how bad things are going on? This is a story I missed, and I fucking wish I heard it a couple weeks ago and brought it at that time, but better late than ever. Eat now, pay later, as more people are going into debt for buying food.
This is everywhere. This is in Canada too. Like I'm guilty of, I went to a wedding on Saturday. My wife and I were pretty hungover, and I just, in a moment of weakness, pulled up Uber Eats, and they do have BNPL options for. It's everywhere, and it ain't slowing down. I think Skip has it too. It's everywhere because people must be using it. There must be some demand for it, right? So it's insane. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I did not. But you know what? You were referencing, I guess, getting stuff from McDonald's, KFC, like other big stores. But what I'm talking to specifically, these are people taking out loans for groceries. This is dire. When people are fucking taking out money just to buy groceries, you know the end is near because you can't collect once they default. What are they going to do? The collections agencies, they're going to go after the digested food at that point. And on the topic of shit, I think it's a good thing. Well, this next story, Joey, and this is another good one. California has legalized human composting. The bill was just passed into law this past week. Think about this, Joey. You could have that bug sandwich. It would be chock full of cucumbers that were grown in the soil. And that soil may be rich in some guy named Rich. So from Business Insider, a California startup is offering cocoon-like pods to allow up to 14 residents to share a single house as an escape from soaring rents and real estate. I'm not sure if you saw this. It's an absolute disaster. It makes those trailers that you get from the trucking, those look like mansions in comparison. These are just tiny little units. You got to fucking rent them. And they're offering this in California. And this is a viable business. Incredible stuff. And if you think things are bad in California, don't worry. It's going to get better because they're going to be helicoptering money. The first week of October, California is going to release the first of inflation relief checks. It's going to send to eligible people making up to $250,000. We talked about this a little while ago. They'll receive payments between $200 and $1,000. This is not creating wealth. This is giving money to people who need it, but it doesn't fucking address the problem. California is a disaster. I'm going to keep talking about it week over week because there's so much going on over there. Joey, I'm going to pass it on to you, though.
It's pretty wild how they just continue to get in their own way, isn't it? Like, they just cannot help themselves when it comes to doing things that are inflationary. And, you know, we talk about this stuff every week. So I want to go on a bit of a rant here about what I think Bitcoiners are getting right and what we've gotten right in the last, I don't know, 2 years for sure, maybe closer to 4 or 5, I guess. In the time I've been a Bitcoiner, we've gotten a lot of stuff right. And I think the thing we're getting wrong about the current macro/market environment as it relates to Bitcoin, because we talk a lot about, you know, economy on this show. I think sometimes we don't talk enough about, you know, the asset that's brought us here together, but we'll try today. Okay. So what have we been right about? Well, we've been right about a couple of things. We've seen in the last 2 years that money management, professional money management, is very difficult. Basically every manager that you or I have access to, or like people in the chat or listening, watching, whatever, anyone that we have access to just isn't a competent money manager, unfortunately. It sucks to say, but like if you have someone from a bank manage your money, or you go to like a wealth manager and they take your calls, they're not a good wealth manager. I hate to say that because probably a lot of you are using them. I know I have used them in the past, but at this point, like, it's safe to say that basically any of these people can be replaced by like a Wealthsimple robo investor, or you just buying the spider, or doing like a standard like FVF, S&P ETF, DCA program, or some other zero cost vehicle, and you wouldn't suffer any loss in quality. Now, you may be saying, well, that sounds pretty harsh because I, you know, think that my money manager has done a good job, and like, yeah, it's been a couple of bad years, but, you know, or yeah, it's been a bad year, but, you know, surely when economic conditions turn around, we'll have an opportunity to make right. And I would just point you to this chart that was shared today by Ritesh Jain. It's a chart comparing the M2 money supply to the S&P 500. Now, you tell me if you think that any money manager is competent enough to get away from this relationship. This is about as tight a correlation in two quote-unquote unrelated numbers that you're ever going to see. If they print, stocks go up. When they tighten, stocks go down. This is, to me, this is the only chart in the modern economy that matters. And we kind of touch on this. We dance around this almost every week. Like we as a society have to start thinking and talking and admitting to ourselves that there's an entire professional class that's stealing from the average person vis-a-vis fees, like this kind of 2 in 10 nonsense. Claiming that they're doing something that's, you know, unattainable to the average investor, when really this chart tells you everything you need to know. They could do nothing at all but buy ETFs, and if they're printing money at the government level, then the stocks are going up. If they're tightening, the stocks are going down. They hide these things and obfuscate, as we said before, with terms like it's an economic downturn, we're in a recession, there's a decline, demand destruction, blah, 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 all this nonsense. It's all horseshit. are they printing or are they not printing? That's all you got to look at, really, okay? And there's other things that come along with that, things that are, you know, kindred spirits to printing, like low rates, for example, other easy money policy that generally comes along with quantitative easing. But generally speaking, this is the relationship. Printer on, stocks up. Printer off, stocks down, okay? That's one thing Bitcoiners have been right about. The second thing Bitcoiners have been right about for the last 5 years is the governments have no idea, month to month, quarter to quarter, year to year, what they're doing. And even in situations where the next action they should take to deliver the best results for the most number of people long term, they'll do the opposite. They always do the opposite because it means short to medium term saving face for them, for their colleagues, for their regime for some short period of time and delaying the pain for someone else, blaming the pain on someone else. This is invariably the method of action from first world governments. We've seen this in energy, right? Europe, for example, Canada too, unfortunately, the United States, basically every first world government has completely botched the energy thing. Finance, of course, demographics, housing, any area, Len, where there can be a thumb placed on the scale, these guys will place it on the scale to the tune of the worst possible outcome. And I think that at this point, the government doing something that will cause pain and failure has to be the default expectation where a thumb on the scale is possible. We were right about that too. The other thing I would say is that all these governments are policy and politics first and outcomes and, you know, good of all people last, dead last. Okay. This is a fact now. Governance priorities are garnering votes and that's it. There's no other priority. Anything else is like a consequential or a coincidental, I should say, side effect of this. If it happens to be good, it's almost purely random. If it happens to be purely good long-term, all it was meant to do was garner votes, if it happens to be good long-term, it's 100% random chance that this was good long-term. There was no intention for this to be good long-term. It just happened to be the case once we got all the votes we wanted. Central banks are incapable of navigating downturns is another thing we were right about, including the ones that they make themselves. It's not like this was like some, you know, act of God, this trillions and trillions of dollars that continued printing. I saw Biden and his wife today in front of a green screen talking about 11, 12 billion a year to fight global warming and developing economies. What the fuck are these guys talking about? But there's no money for this. They commit to it and they commit to pledging this money as if it was their own when really it belongs to you and I, or in this case, I guess our neighbors to the south. They always lend central banks act in a way that adds multiples of pain to the outcome on every single time horizon, even the short term now, as we've seen with inflation. So even the short term, this 12-month period after the printing started in 2020, you've already seen now the pain this has caused. Such a high degree of pain that governments at the state level, like you mentioned in California, are giving more money to their citizens without access to the printer. They're finding a way to make this worse as well because they just, as I mentioned before, only care about votes. They don't care about long-term pain. There's no ability for these guys to prioritize what's important to a successful country, a successful society. Worse, the tools that we keep hearing about from central banks, especially in the United States, are woefully inadequate, okay? They're ineffective. And because they're ineffective and inadequate, and because they're limited to those ineffective and inadequate tools, the response from the banks is just to use them more and more and more and more and more with a heavier and heavier hand, quicker and quicker, so that the sitting government can meet this desire that the population has for them to do something. But the something is always making things worse. Okay? It's never to the population's benefit. Now, we're going to leave central banks alone for a bit here. We're going to talk about the press, the media. Okay, it's full of woefully incompetent people, whether it's commentators, writers, journalists, these opinion talking heads that you see on MSNBC, podcasts that NPR puts out about the inflation. I mean, Tiff Macklem has become a talking head. He's doing TikTok style videos now for the BOC in some kind of sick, twisted turn of events. This guy is now stuttering and stammering while Comic Sans font rolls beside him with every word that he fucks up along the way for a minute long video about why raising rates, though counterintuitive, is going to help the economy. This is a gong show, okay? And all these guys have become these sort of known incompetent people. Now, the worst part is that this incompetence contributes, I think, to the general like mood of the population, and it contributes to mistakes at the ballot box. Now, that's a bold statement. People will say, well, they're not making mistakes at the ballot box. They're voting for something that they believe in that you don't believe in. I don't think that's true. I don't think people have any idea what they believe in. I think people make snap decisions at ballot boxes. I think no one, generally speaking, decides who they're going to vote for before they drive out to the polls. And as we've seen in the last little while, there's so much apathy in the Canadian electorate that no one even bothers to show up to the elections anyway. I think Trudeau's last win was about 30% turnout or 40% turnout, super low by historic measures. So when we talk about all these things, what we're really seeing from party to party to party is the compounding of these issues one after another after another, and this sort of negative feedback loop that continues to fold in on itself over time. A poor policy decision is met with poor education about the policy decision, is met with poor incentives to claim the policy decision was right, is met with poor media to sugarcoat and shine up and polish the poor policy decision for public consumption. And then the public makes a bad decision at the ballot box because they don't know any better when they're asked whether the policy decision was to their benefit or not. It's a disaster. And this is happening all over the modern world. Only now are we seeing what the cost of this is, because the printer doesn't work at the same level of effectiveness, a level of effectiveness that it did in 2020. And so we're seeing now the true cost of this. Now, Len, you may ask, what has the cost been so far? Well, let me tell you. The MSCI World Index and the Bloomberg Global Aggregate Bond Index, since its peak in November 2021, not even a year ago, do you know how much it's lost in US dollar value, the two of them? The Aggregate Bond Index and the MSCI World Index.
23%.
$29 trillion in lost value. Now, to give you an idea of how much that is, okay, to put this in context for you, the world's international reserve assets, the entire world's international reserve assets, $12 trillion. It's almost a 3x of lost value there. An insane amount of wealth.
I'm gonna talk about that in just a second.
Sure. It's an insane amount of wealth destruction, okay? So what's this mean for Bitcoin? Well, unpopular opinion inbound here, I think, Len. At the moment, I think Bitcoin is a luxury asset. I think you and me probably agree on that, though maybe we'd use different phrasing for it. It's a thing that you can only really own and invest in, at least right now, if you have money to burn. If you're a new entrant, you're not going to become a Bitcoin hodler or a Bitcoin investor as a new entrant unless you have money to burn. I think this is the default setting, and I think it's where we all started. I think if I didn't have money to burn, I wouldn't have ever started investing in Bitcoin, and that was my initial first foot in the door. I got money to burn. I have a decent investment portfolio. I own my own home. What am I going to do with this little delta in my balance sheet? Well, I'm going to park it in something that at the time I thought was speculative. The current market conditions mean that no one, as far as the people who need Bitcoin the most and don't have any at the moment, no one's going to meet this criteria for a new investor. It's very hard to have money to spare as someone who is suffering from broken money and suffering from inflation and suffering from poor policy decisions. Having that little bit extra money to start holding Bitcoin is a problem. That's not good for us as Bitcoiners, and it's not good for the price, and it's not good for the market. Now, worse, I would also posit to you, Len, that even the most hardened hodlers have never been in this environment before. It's an environment I think is very difficult to participate in as an investor in Bitcoin and equities and real estate and whatever. And I think if we're being honest, which we try to be on the show, which I'm going to try to be right now, if we're being honest, we have to admit that these conditions are likely to drive selling amongst even the most convicted hodlers. The downward price pressure is going to mount, I think, in the next few months. And it's going to become significant fairly quickly, I think. I think that, you know, forced selling leads to price depression, obviously. And then people who are on the fence between hodling and selling because their economic situation is worsening sell out of fear that they're going to have to sell at a lower price later. And it drives that negative flywheel. I think this is something that we're going to have to contend with. And whether or not you've been holding for 5 years or 10 years, the fact of the matter is you've never been through an economic situation like this. You've never been there. Some people would argue this is what Bitcoin is designed for this kind of fiat collapse. It very well may be, but we don't know how people are going to behave. Human psychology is a funny thing. You may know everything, but as a famous philosopher Miguel Tyson once said, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face, okay? And you're about to get punched in the face here, I think. It's unpopular to say this, as well. But I think that ultimately we need some market success to drive Bitcoin to a new all-time high price. I say this because right now there's no doubt it's a risk asset. There's no doubt it's kind of a luxury good. And I think that without the broader S&P succeeding and showing some kind of strength, and you know, I think that it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of this relationship that we don't want to admit exists, but it definitely exists. Okay. We to drive adoption, we need the S&P to be strong. Right now it's not strong. I think the bottom line, Len, the bottom line at the moment, I think for Bitcoiners who want to destroy these legacy systems, okay, you're in between a rock and a hard place right now, in a place you've never been before. It's this idea that we got to upend banking as it exists now, this kind of gatekeeping, rent-seeking practice that we all agree is parasitic. But at the same time, you need some level of success in those systems to provide consumer confidence that gives people both the extra wealth and the confidence, I'll use the term again, to put a little bit of their money into Bitcoin, to discover Bitcoin, the asset. And right now we're not getting either thing. And these are difficult realities to face for Bitcoiners, man. But I do think that these are things we have to contend with. And it's the first time that this asset class has had to contend with these things. And I, for one, am interested to see how this turns out, because I think that a lot of people are in situations that are different from maybe you and I, where if Bitcoin goes to zero, like, yeah, I'm going to be fucking pissed, man, but I'm not going to starve and I'm not going to lose my house and I'm not going to, you know what I mean? But a lot of people are not in that situation. And I don't know what the psychology of those people will look like if the S&P drops to 3,100 and the price of their house drops by another 25% and there's layoffs where they work and inflation's, you know, 6%, 7% for another year and Canadian dollar drops against the US dollar. Everyone's talking about GDP. Do you know what the Canadian dollar's dropped against US dollar in the last month?
I don't even have a clue.
Almost 10%. Almost 10%. A fucking huge chunk, man.
Yeah, like, you're just repeating exactly what Saifedean says, and he says that the US dollar is the, you know, it's the primo shitcoin, and
it's dollar milkshake. This is dollar milkshake theory, that US dollar is being destroyed too, but it's being destroyed more slowly than all these other economic means of trade are being destroyed. And it is scary to see this stuff play out. And as much as we want to talk about diamond hands, laser eyes, let me know how this looks at Bitcoin 10K, 8K, if we get there. Who fucking knows, right? I'm not predicting price, but if the S&P drops to 3,100, you better believe the price of Bitcoin is going to go with it. And it's going to be a precipitous drop. It's going to be fast. It's going to be, it's going to evoke emotions in you and worry in you that you didn't think you had as a Bitcoiner coming here every week or listening to whatever shows you listen to. This is a dangerous situation for people who think they are convicted and are playing with money they need to survive. And I'm curious as to how many market participants in Bitcoin and Ethereum and whatever shitcoin of choice are playing with money that they actually can't afford to lose. We're going to find out.
Yeah. So it is like you're saying, everything goes to the last strong shitcoin, which is the US dollar. And it just doesn't make sense for people to hold, or countries even to hold, and businesses to hold on to their shitcoin. Every other currency is a derivative of the US dollar. It's like another layer, if you want to call it. And that's what it really is. And ultimately, you know, the US dollar, which is backed by nothing, and it's going to be inflated to infinity because they just keep making more and more of it to make ends meet. This is just the reality. It's just going to fail ultimately. And MMT, it's, you know, you look at it and the people that are behind the levers to make it work, a lot of them are politically motivated. They're there, and they may say they're not, because the Fed should be an independent body. But let's be honest, the Fed and all other central banks, they are politically motivated and they're privy to what's going on with election cycles. They're short-term election cycles. We don't have this 100-year plan over here that we have in, or that exists in China. Over here in Canada, 4 years. They don't in the United States. You got, you know, only a few years before the next election happens. So you're always fighting for another term. You're not fighting for two terms, three terms out. It's just for the next term. And this comes to the conclusion that we're going to have no more money. You just keep using whatever you have, and you have nothing. I could even go back. Remember, I was telling you that, keep in mind that number. COP26 last year, they earmarked $130 trillion. You were saying or 12 trillion is a heck of a lot of money. Was that the number you're quoting?
29 trillion is the loss in MSCI and the global bond ETF since November 2021. 12 trillion is the total number of reserve assets held around the world. So every country's reserve assets are about 12 trillion in total.
And they're earmarking $130 trillion to fight climate change. And if you want to understand how big a number that is 1.5% of the global GDP. So if you want to divert all the production numbers towards fighting inflation, you got to do it for a year and a half. That's insane. And you did talk about our friend Tiff Macklem. I think he's now realizing that he's fighting for his job. That's why you see him out there more and more, because there may be some campaign out there to get rid of him. He may be a scapegoat. It may be his problem. But either way, I think he's fighting for his job. And the turnout in 2021, I took a look, it was 62%, still very, very low. And it's been on the decline. But yeah, if we get to the 30s, man, we're in front of some real fucking problems. And I would like to say, when people go to the polls, I think for the most part, I'll say a higher percentage than not, significantly higher percentage than not, they know who they're going to be voting for. Long before they get in the car, long before they even wake up that morning of the poll. And this is just based on my experience. I could be wrong in this. Maybe people are now more finicky and making decisions right at the polling station, but that's just my two cents. And yeah, the Bitcoin, it's has to decouple from the NASDAQ and S&P. You showed a chart there between the M2 money supply and the markets and how correlated they are. You could have overlaid Bitcoin price onto
that. For sure. You're 100% right, Len.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to see this existing system collapse. I really don't. I mean, we talk about it on a weekly basis, because accompanying the existing financial system collapsing is a heck of a lot of what Powell described as pain. A lot of people are going to suffer. People are going to go hungry. And it's not going to be a pretty thing. I don't want to see it. But it's just the way that the people that behind it are operating the things, controlling these levers. It looks like they are gearing this for failure. The banking system needs an overhaul, and something needs to be done. We're going to have to take one or two steps back, maybe more, before we can take five forward. That's the reality, and that's what
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what we talk all the time about the fix. It's funny, you and me were talking about how you weren't going to take all night with the A block, but obviously this is a story that requires a little bit of discussion. I don't know what the fix is, but like. I know what the fix is not. The fix is not, you know, fire and brimstone, blow up, food lines, no energy, inflation at a you know, 20-30%. That ain't the fix. And like, I'm guilty of this too. You and I think are guilty of this. Like, we kind of hoot and holler when inflation comes in at like a 9 handle. Like, it's a quick I told you so moment, and you get a bit of a dopamine hit. But like, that's not good. There's a lot of people who are suffering because of those numbers. You know, we talked about food bank usage. I can't wait to see what divorce rates look like next year. I bet you they'll be elevated. Same thing with, burnout in different professions that are outside of traditional burnout expectations, like nursing and teaching, obviously both heavy burnout, but I wouldn't be surprised to see other professions, you know, having the same thing as well. We talked about quiet quitting. Quiet quitting is not what you do when you want to stick it to your employer. Quiet quitting is what you do when you're burnt out. And the burnout doesn't necessarily come from the job you're doing. It comes from the other stresses in your life. And those stresses are directly related to the cost of living. There's no other, like, what stress in your life is not at least tangentially related to the cost of living? What stress? Your job is hard. You have to take that job because you can't afford your house without it. You can't sleep at night. Well, you probably can't sleep because your finances are at least, you know, a little bit in part keeping you up. You're worried about your kids' education. You want the best for your kids. Well, the cost is going up 10% a year, if not more. That's going to worry you. The costs of things is at the core of every problem in society. Our demographics are shit. We're not having enough kids because no one wants to have kids, man. Like you can't start a family if you're not relatively certain about your economic future. And what we have here is a lack of certainty about everyone's economic future. And it's not even just about the stock market. Now we're talking about major currencies, man. Like, you saw what happened with the GBP last night, 5%, and like, it was like a 5-minute candle. Like, that's a currency. And the you know, BOE had to come out and make a statement today about that. That's to me, that's stress. Like I said in my little diatribe there, that's stress we haven't seen before. And, you know, it's not just Bitcoiners. No, it's not just Bitcoiners haven't seen it. There hasn't been a currency crisis in the modern democratic world since World War II. There hasn't been one.
That's better said. Yes. Yeah.
So no one has dealt with this before. No one. Okay. This is not going to be like, you know, I keep on seeing shades of 08, shades of 01. And we've talked about that before. Like, yeah, I guess there's some shades of 08 in terms of like the obfuscation and obvious Ponzi-nomics of some of these investment vehicles. But like, this ain't going to be 08, man. If it goes south, it's going to be its own thing. And it's going to make 08 look like a, you know, a trip to Sunday school, I think. It's much more wide-ranging. The contagion is much more potent. And when you start talking about currency crises in the UK, in the Eurozone, energy shortages in modern democracies, and a population that's so uneducated, they seem to want to push themselves over the cliff in the name of environmentalism, I guess. Like, I don't know. And now I'm starting to see on Twitter, too, something we talked about in the past, that combating these things, you know, with raising rates, it's going to lead to more destruction long term if they miss the mark. And the likelihood seems to be higher and higher every day that they're going to miss the mark. And it's not just the BOC. It's all, the American Central Bank. It's Europe. It's everywhere. Everyone is going to miss the mark. They're all oversteering. And, you know, that's what they do. They oversteer. Just that before, there was a little more forgiveness on the other side of that oversteering. Now there's not. There's no more slack. There's no slack in the line. I've seen this everywhere. Bonds, like you said, are going up in flames. It's clear that there's no bid in some of these markets where there should be, you know, by rights, a little bit more liquidity. There's not. And, you know, if Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Nvidia, like if these companies really roll over in the S&P, there's nothing else holding it up. Kathy Wood and her stuff is down like 90% or something, 86%.
She stepped down from one of her positions. Like, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I think she's no longer leading the...
She's got to step down from every... She's got to abandon ship. She's got to jump off the ark, man, okay? She ain't Moses. She got to get off that thing. That's not carrying her to the promised land. And I look at all this and I think there's a lot of people in Bitcoin. We talked about this before. We talked about it with the homesteading LARP thing in Bitcoin. There's a lot of Bitcoiners who talk a big game about diamond hands, Bitcoin standard. Let's see what you're fucking made of when this thing goes sideways, because there's a real chance it's going to go sideways. And like I said, that sell pressure is going to come from all directions, not just the Bitcoin price. It's one thing if the price of Bitcoin goes down, if the stock market's not going with it, if your house is not going with it, if your job is not going with it. But if all those things go, you're going to find yourself thinking in a different way. I guarantee it. And that's going to lead to a new environment for Bitcoin. And I'm interested to see how we behave.
Let's move on, Joey, because there's still more to talk about in the A block. It's going to be a long show. Let's talk about Europe and the rest of the world. And just today we learned that Italy has elected a new prime minister, Giorgia Meloni. And people are likening her to Benito Mussolini, giving her far right stance and her point of view. And leading up to this win, we had the European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen. She was saying that they had the tools at their disposal to right the wrongs should Meloni have been elected. And reading between the lines, democracy works unless the wrong person is elected. But we could just move on from Italy, because there's not much. We talked a lot about them, I guess, today already. The economy over there, just one last thing, is getting wrecked. And this is something that may threaten to bring down the whole European Union. But we could move on to something else that's been getting wrecked. And you mentioned it many, many times, the British pound, or we should now rebrand it as the British ounce, or maybe the British gram. There's got to be something else. It's no longer a pound. I took a look. It's losing close to 10% of its value against the US dollar within the last month. And within the past year, almost 30%. That's a significant drop by a relatively strong currency. And the Bank of England said they will not hesitate to change the interest rates, but decided not to do so at this time. And you mentioned there was an emergency meeting today, and it was speculated that an emergency rate hike would be the result, but it's not the case. They were just flapping their lips over there. And all this took place. The Bank of England actually raised rates this past week, 50 basis points. And this was the highest level in 14 years. So they were going to raise another one in the second within 7 days. That would have been nuts. And check this out. This all comes in the heels from His Majesty's Treasury, which came out this past week, and they said they will refuse to, going forward, to publish UK's economic forecast.
That's unbelievable.
And these forecasts, it's fucking like, these are indicators that you need to figure out how the health of the economy is going. It helps out for confidence in the market, investors, and so forth. So Mr. and Mrs. Investor, fuck you. We're not going to be able to give you anything going forward. You're going to be flying blind at this point because no more forecasts going forward. Oh, you know what? Maybe not giving you a forecast actually is giving you a forecast and letting you know exactly what's in store going forward. It's a double P. We're talking about Powell's pain. And the Bank of England did decide this past week that the country is in a recession. And this admission should come to no surprise. And all this shit coming out, we also have news that the banks in London, they're being prepped and prepping the staff for possible blackouts this winter as electricity demands will far exceed the electricity supply. And sadly, the people in London may wake up one day in winter unable to heat their apartments due to lack of electricity, unable to withdraw their money because the bank is potentially closed. Oh, by the way, and charging your fucking electric car over there? Well, it's gone up 42% since May, according to The Guardian. And if you wanted to figure out how much that costs, that's around 10 pounds or ounces. That's a big jump from May of this year. So that's going to cost you a lot more money to charge up your Teslas. And remember, those Teslas, they're fucking heavy cars. So pushing them is going to be kind of a challenge, especially on the famous rolling hills that they have throughout England that they're known for. We could talk about Germany. Let's move on to them. The PPI is up 45.8% in August. And this is looking for year-over-year gains. And this is up from July, 37.2. So this is a massive jump. And remember, Germany is the economic heart of the European economy. And a lot of shit of this that's happening in Europe, it's a result of poor policy with respect to power generation. People, now they don't fucking learn. I'll give you an example. This past week, the Doel 3 nuclear plant, and this generates 1 gigawatt of energy, or roughly 10% of Belgium's electricity requirement, it's closing shop. And this stems from a federal law passed in 2003 that prevents power plants from providing energy past their 40th birthday. All right. So just off the press.
Wait a minute. What? After 40 years, they got to shut them down. They can't refurb. They can't retrofit. They got to close it.
Mothball the fucking thing. It's done. Find something else. And windmills, solar panels, you name it. It's all going to replace 1 gigawatt. Good the fuck luck finding that energy. So just off the press today, I got some information from Bloomberg. Lagarde was saying for the European Central Bank will debate QT once it has normalized rates, whatever the fuck normalized rates really mean. And she said that the European Central Bank will consider shrinking its balance only once it has completed the normalization of these rates. Raising borrowing costs is the most appropriate and effective tool for now to combat high euro area inflation, according to her. She's trying to suck and blow at the same time. Good luck doing that. And we can move even a little bit further east, and we could talk about Lebanon. We learned just past week that banks are shut down indefinitely. Fuck you if you have money. You're not going to be able to withdraw it moving forward. You're fucking screwed. The banking system is a mess. Even more further east, we'll go to Japan. And they have directly intervened in the currency markets to halt the yen's decline. How long can they continue to intervene to prop up the fucking yen? They're doing this by dumping U.S. bonds. Eventually, they're going to run out of bonds to sell. But until then, they do have a fuckload on the reserve they can sell. But still, they're doing everything they can to prop up the yen's value. It's incredible what's going on there. So let's recap. We are getting all the worst things this past century. We have extremist governments being elected. We have unchecked inflation. We have a new Cold War. We have divide and conquer tactics. The pound sterling being tarnished. People shivering at home in the wintertime this winter. A war in Europe, in Eastern Europe, that continues to drag on thanks to Russian conscription. And on this, I just want to end this, Joey. And we had some recent policy measures in Europe with respect to energy. Europe is noticing a spike in coal usage. And this is due to they're trying to offset the energy production right now because solar, wind, and other preferred methods of energy just aren't up to snuff. So they're using more coal to meet the demands. That's fine. But with this increased coal usage, you have fucking China telling Europe not to backslide on their climate commitments. China is the world's largest emitter when it comes to carbon, and they're not wagging their finger to Europe and saying, you can't fucking use any more carbon to heat your homes and all that. It's a fucking comedy show, Julia, and we are the people on stage.
It's a troll, right? Like, there's no other way to describe what's happening. with China telling Europe not to burn coal while they open like hundreds of coal plants all over the country. But like, Len, what do we think? The question I have for people who get mad about, like, for example, okay, this Russian Twitch channel that was running, where a guy is just running his gas stove to the Russian national anthem or something like that on Twitch.
I didn't see that.
And Twitch shut it down. People were very upset about this because it's like, you know, a slap in the face, right? And I see that. I laugh. I look at China telling Europe not to run any more coal, and Europe, you know, presumably being upset with that commentary and that feedback. And I laugh. And for people who think, like, you know, this Georgia Maroney or whatever is the next coming of Benito, maybe she is. I have no idea. I think she's, you know, conservative. She's got some stances I don't agree with. Like, should same-sex couples be allowed to adopt kids? Yeah, I think that's fine. And she doesn't want to do that. Okay, we disagree on that. But there's probably things I agree with her on. The thing is, I laugh at that too. And the reason I laugh is because it's not because I agree with the antagonist in the story, right? I don't agree with the Russian guy running the gas stove Twitch channel. I don't agree with China giving slanted commentary to Europe about their use of coal and backsliding on their commitment to carbon neutrality or whatever. I don't agree necessarily with Georgia and the Italian electorate. But what I do think is funny is that two things really. One, these people don't learn their lessons. They just don't learn. They never look inward to find out why they're subjected to these comments and all these things, right? This is the sort of clown world thesis that no one ever looks inward and is like, hey, what? Maybe this is happening because I'm an idiot, but no one ever does that. And the other thing I think I laugh at, Len, is like, what do these people think they deserve? Does Van der Leyen think she deserves some kind of reverence from people, from the media, from the European citizenry? Does Europe think they deserve some kind of respect from China at the moment? Does the European arm of Twitch video think that they deserve some more sensitivity from the Russian guy playing the anthem and running his gas stove from the motherland? The answer is these people probably all think that, and they're all wrong. They don't deserve anything. What you deserve is the kick in the pants you're getting for poor policy decisions, for self-importance, for virtue signaling, more or less. I don't think anyone is arguing that there's not some benefit to trying to diversify your power supply or your energy supply, but they did it wrong. And I don't think anyone is arguing that there may not be, you know, all great things about Georgia being elected in Italy, but you had power for a long time. You fucking blew it on the left. And I don't think anyone is arguing that Europe should have to starve or go cold because they are in disagreement with Vladimir Putin's military activity. But they weren't prepared. They were dependent on Russian oil and Russian energy and Russian LNG. This stuff is not that hard to figure out. The question they have to start answering is not what are we entitled to, right, from the perspective of this self-importance that they're keen to remind us about, but rather it is what do we deserve, and what they're getting is what they deserve.
You know, really, Joey, we are in a fucking cold war, and a lot of people haven't really woke up to this thing. It's been decades since we've been in a cold war. You know, we've had a slow progression to get to this point. You know, it was originally a war in manufacturing, a war on intellectual property. Now we're seeing a war on the US dollar. A war now is on our fucking way of life. And soon, who knows, there may be an actual war that breaks out from it. But don't get me wrong, we are in a fucking cold war. It's us versus them. We didn't have this for a long time. And once the Soviet Union fell, there was a wonderful period of opportunity. Markets opened up, but that's now long gone. We lost that. There's now an us versus them situation, and we have to address that.
Do you listen to Macro Voices? I think friend of the show, as my face like comes out of focus here, I don't know, this camera sometimes drives me nuts, but friend of the show Mike Green was on Macro Voices, I think like 3 or 4 months ago, around the time the Ukraine invasion happened. And Eric Townsend was alluding to a guest that he had that was a big name in investment and macro, who thought that World War III had actually begun something like 5 years ago. And he wouldn't say the name because the guy who had the thesis thought it was too far out there, too far removed from reality, and just too far afoot from where most of his peers were. And it turns out it was Mike. And so he had Mike on to talk about the thesis. And they're saying a lot of the same stuff, right? Like, if you think that all this technology-based warfare, IP-based warfare, TikTok, for example, like truly modern warfare at its finest, right? Like commandeering the attention of youth away from academics, away from personal development, away from growing as individuals, and helping to build America a stronger backbone, and instead having them fall victim to an algorithm controlled by the CCP, all while they track your keystrokes and screen, stuff on your screen. That's incredible, man. And parents are completely ill prepared. America is completely ill prepared. I think you're spot on. We're in a Cold War. We've been in the Cold War for a long time. I'd recommend people find that episode of Macro Voices. I don't know exactly when it was, but yeah, I think you're right, Len. And we're going to see this. It's going to ramp up, right? I think we agree on that. What do you think?
It's not going to slow down. Ramping up 100%.
It's currency and energy next. It's currency and energy next. There's no doubt about this. Yeah.
They're formulating that new BRICS currency, energy. Like, look at them. They're consolidating energy under their control. Yeah, we're fucked. But let's move on. There's still more to talk about. We're already an hour and 10 in. So we'll move on to the Canadian side. And number one,
Should we do the contest?
Oh, my bad. Yeah.
We should do the contest. I'll put
Let's do it.
It's late. I almost forgot. Okay. I'm going to put it on the show account. So the show account is, what is it? Canadian CBP pod? What is it?
You know, I don't even know.
I'll tell you right now. It's a Canadian BTC pod. Okay. This is Twitter, the contest tweet post a screenshot of your queue position. The other tweet for biggest jump is on, I think it's on my account, so I'll just put my handle there, from last Monday. If you jumped the most, you get a shirt. Two. Okay. Shirt two. Send tweet. Of your, what is it? Shake pay earn.
I think so.
Okay. Queue position.
If you put even something remotely close, people are going to be able to connect the dots.
Tweets out. I'll see if, we can pick a couple winners, before the end of the show, but let's find out. Yeah. All right. So anyway, Canadian stories. Yeah, let's hit it. All you, buddy.
Okay. Well, we will lead off with the CPI for Canada came in for August, and the number is 7%. And if you look at the numbers, well, we are following the same trend as for our neighbors down south. So in Canada, we had 8.1 reported in June, 7.6 reported in July, and now August, we're at 7. So the August CPI, it's down. So I'm going to read you three different titles from articles and give you an idea.
This is going to be so good.
No, I mean, so from Wealth Professional, August CPI, a welcome win in Bank of Canada's inflation fight. The Toronto Star, inflation is cooling, but the Bank of Canada isn't done its fight. And Globe and Mail, Canada's inflation rate eases to 7% in August as gas prices fall, but food costs continue to climb. I'm going to give you a headline from the CBP. If you're celebrating a 7% CPI as a win, we need a new coach, president, and GM. There's no number one overall pick for tanking. You're just making more of us work in a septic tank factory in the end. You're not doing us a service. 2% target, see you later. 4% target, who fucking cares? We're fucked.
What do you want me to add to that? I mean, it's funny. Listen, here's how you know it's going well. Tiff Macklem's making TikTok videos. We talked about this, like, I think probably a year ago or close to a year ago. Tiff Macklem doesn't want to be making TikTok videos. He doesn't want to be appearing on Evan Solomon's show. He doesn't want to be talking to Kovalis. Oh,
yeah.
I forget.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be doing any of those things. Okay. But he is, and he's doing it because he's in hot water now, I think, like you mentioned, for his job, but certainly because he's maybe not doing as good a job as he should be controlling inflation. So regardless of what the press tells you, drawing back to my earlier commentary about the press and media compounding the issue, you got to look at what these guys are doing, not what they're saying. And they're doing an awful lot more than they want to be doing. So take whatever you hear on, you know, National Post, Globe, whatever, you know, conservative or liberal publication or media outlet. Take it with a grain of salt. If you can afford salt, that is. You might have to take it with something else, maybe a little bit of gravel or something, whatever you can pull off your driveway.
TikTok, he's doing this, I'm assuming, under the Bank of Canada's TikTok website.
Or he is. Account, the Bank right? of Canada Twitter account. Yeah, it's like a, so, you haven't seen the video? I kind of half want to pull it up because I think
I saw the video. I didn't know it was on TikTok. I saw it on Twitter. I don't have TikTok.
So. It might be a Twitter video. I'm not sure. But we'll watch it in the after show. We'll comment on it in the after show.
I just want to state, if it is on TikTok, I just took a look right now, that you can monetize TikTok videos. And you get between 2 and 4 cents US for every 1,000 views.
Do you think that's how they're going to pay down the debt?
This might be a very creative solution to the problem. And I like this out of the box thinking.
They can start the account TikTok Tiff, maybe. It's probably actually already like some American teenager named Tiffany who's got that account. But anyway, might be worth trying there, Tiff. Give it a shot. Maybe you could buy it off her for a couple trill.
Let's move on. Home ownership rates in Canada. And I have a chart here for the past 10 years, 2011, 2016, and 2021. They're on a decline on just about every age group, Joey. This is actually really concerning. So in 10 years, the only two age groups that increased their home ownership rates, like in terms of having more people own it than not, is between 75 and 84 and people 85 and older. So basically 75 and up, you have a higher percentage of people owning homes now than you did 10 years ago. But every other age bracket, it's slightly down or very much, much lower. And the one that took it a kick to the teeth were between 25 and 29 and 30 and 34. That was a very drastic drop in terms of the people owning homes now versus 10 years ago. But surprisingly, Joy, I'm just looking, 40 to 44 drop, 45 to 49, there's been a drop and so forth. Like, this is a trend, albeit small right now. If it accelerates, BlackRock is just going to come in and scoop them all up and we'll all just be renters moving forward.
Do you want to hear a dinger stat? Do you know how many houses built between 2016 and 2021 are now rented out by percentage?
Well, what's the overall number?
Percentage. By percentage. Like what percentage of the homes built between 2016 and 2021 are rentals?
I'll say it's going to be less than 20, maybe 18, 15%.
40%.
Those are condos too. I think they're taking into consideration. So you're taking just home in general, right? Like not just because I could tell you from experience, a lot of people, they buy condos and they just fucking rent those fucking things.
Of course.
It's not as easy. It's a wonderful gig to get into because if you believe the price is moving up, you could get in, leverage that, go to the next one, leverage and just bankroll that. If it ever unwinds, you're fucked. But when does it ever unwind in Canada?
Typically not often.
I mean, when it does, good luck. We're all fucked. But for the most part, it's a pretty sound investment strategy, NFA.
I mean, this is like 40% is a huge number. So I guess to your point about whether or not this will accelerate, you know, if I had to guess whether or not the number between 2021 and 2025 would be higher or lower than 40% in the current environment, it's probably going to be higher. Isn't that crazy? Like there's going to be no one who can afford a house. The stress test is going to be too hard. There's going to be some, especially if a conservative government wins, there'll be some measure of trying to get that market back under control, even if it causes short-term difficulty, I think. Let's see. I'm just spitballing, but I just think overall, like you're more likely to see this continue and accelerate as far as that number of new builds being rented as opposed to lived in, you know, as a primary residence. By the people who bought them or own them. It's very strange, man. Not good at all.
You know, we had 40-year mortgages here at one time, and I'm not sure which government brought it in and which government took it out, but now we're sitting at 25 years is the max. You could probably still get a little bit higher than that from non-chartered banks, but still 25 is the norm. And wasn't it this government instituted the stress test, or am I wrong? Was it the previous government? Whoever the fuck did it. Yeah, it is what it is.
I'm not against the stress test. Mm-hmm. I don't think you are.
Nor am I.
The stress test, yeah, the stress test makes sense.
It has value.
It's, just not as currently constructed. It's all it's not enough. And there should be a stress test for people who are not going to use the home as a primary residence. Like that's the important thing. You know, that number has got to be higher than what it would be for someone who's using it as a principal residence. I don't know. What do I know? It's time to bring on the Carrazza brothers to the CDP finally. Because we got it. Because I want to pick their brains for an hour on our terms, which is obviously a nod to the title of their show. But anyway, yeah, it's time to bring those guys on. I'll have to reach out to them maybe tonight or tomorrow and get them booked.
And I just have to say, the point of view that I'm coming from is as a homeowner, and my point of view would be very different if I was not a homeowner. Maybe I would be very much against the stress test. I'm not sure. I'm not sitting in wearing those shoes right now, so I'm just putting that out there. So people that are going to be sending hate mail to me, I understand. I understand where you're coming from. Next up, I have a story from the Bank of Montreal. They say that brace for impact because there's no retreat from a hard landing. And the bank is, they're warning investors to brace for impact and to get ready for a hard landing. And they're saying a recession is likely to happen. No fucking shit. And they're also predicting rates in the U.S., get this, are going to climb higher than they do in Canada. That's interesting. I thought Canada was going to be matching them at the very least, but BMO thinks the opposite. U.S. is going to be higher. They say the U.S. is expected to raise their key interest rates from 4.5 to 4.75 in 2023, and Canada has a lower outlook of 4.25%. So yeah, we're not going to be raising rates as aggressively here in Canada, according to BMO, but this is all just fucking predictions. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? But they do say, fuck the hard landing. It's going to be coming. So brace for impact.
Interesting commentary from CIBC as well, talking about Canadian banks. CIBC expects another 50 points in October, which is like pretty, I think, standard fare. But they note that if the States continues on this path, Macklem won't have to raise again to get the desired slowdown for the Canadian economy. I don't know if that's true. They're basically saying, well, like much like you said earlier,
yeah,
as the US dollar is the sort of head honcho, we are a derivative of their economic policy. CIBC agrees with you. They think that if the US continues to go 75 and 100, then Macklem's not going to have to do much more because the destruction is going to come from next door and it's going to affect us in a tertiary way, and he's not going to have to raise. The question is, will they continue raising anyways for other reasons, or with the election in mind next year that I think they're going to have, that maybe we agree they're going to have. I don't know if we agree on that, but are they going to start cutting those rates and celebrate it as a successful policy execution by the BOC and the Liberal government? I'm not sure, but it's interesting, man. Like, for all the doom and gloom earlier, and the doom and gloom I think we hit every week, even though we try not to, these are very, very interesting times to be alive in. There'll be books written about the last, 3-4 years and the 3 or 4 years to come as well. It's going to be wild, man, to see how fast some of these banks pivot back in the name of political outcomes that are desired by the governing party. I'm interested in seeing that.
A lot of things are happening very quick, and a totally off topic here, the Luna fiasco, that unwound so fucking fast in a very, very short period of time. We're living history right now, and we're going to be looking back at these periods of time as something that's very noteworthy. So make notes, because when you're writing your memoirs, you don't want to miss anything. So moving on, the last Canadian story I have, we talked last week about the yield curve, the Canadian yield curve, the twos and the tens, and they were inverted so bad that the last time we had this type of disparity was back in 1990/91. Well, the twos and tens, they're now with -70 basis points, and this is now the most inverted since definitively 1990. No more 1991 in the equation. Recession incoming, according to this shit. Brace yourself. This is going to be some fucked up shit coming along. I don't know what else to add to this, but another thing, yeah, brace for impact, according to what BMO said in the previous topic here. It's a fucking disaster, and there's so many signals showing that we're fucked.
It's one indicator after another, right, that something is breaking or broken. You hear often in macroeconomic circles, finance circles, FinTwit, the Fed will tighten until something breaks. This is what they mean. Twos and tens inverting for this long a time at this level is an example of something that's going to break. We're friends with Massa, obviously. Maybe we can ask him about what exactly this means. I think the general idea is that you're not being compensated for duration risk anymore. And so that, I guess, has some, feedback in the system that doesn't bode well for the market more broadly. We should ask him about that. And I think also the mastermind we're doing on the 5th of October, when we bring on SB from Woke Antidote, he's another guy who has a bit of insight into this because of his professional chops. So all this to say, Len, that What's the answer? The answer is we got a problem. We don't know exactly what the nature of the problem is yet because it hasn't had time to develop and spread, but it's clear something is going wrong. Let's see what the first thing to give is.
And it's not going to take much to really torpedo this whole thing. They don't have too many chambers left too many bullets left in their chambers. And whatever happens next, maybe a larger scale war, supply chain issues that really go fucking tits up. Like, who the hell knows? Something that just really just throws a wrench in the gears, that's going to fuck things up and you can't fix it moving forward. Mm-hmm. And that's it for the Canadian news. I got a few rest of the news stories I just want to knock off my list here. Sure. Number one, we have MicroStrategy. You heard what happened this past week. They bought $6 million. This was on September 20th. So in the first 9 months of 2020, they bought over 5,000 Bitcoin. And so they hold now around 130,000 Bitcoin in total. They bought if you add it all together, $4 billion was used to purchase those around 130,000 Bitcoin. And it's, they lost some money over that because right now that the value of that Bitcoin is sitting around $2.47 billion at the time that I got this information. May have changed even more, but they lost around $1.5 billion in total. Man, oh man, that guy's got diamond hands to stick through this because that $1.5 billion, I know it's not his money, it's investors' money and everything, but still, it's he's got to wake up every morning and say, fuck, this is an interesting thing.
let's see, right? I think for all the shit I said earlier about the negative pressure being unprecedented in the Bitcoin space, what I also think is that you'll be rewarded for patience at some point because unless you think the stock market is going to completely implode and go to zero, then you know the natural brother of that belief is that the thing will recover. And so when it recovers, inevitably, whether it takes 5 years or 10 years or whatever, however many months or years, Bitcoin will go with it. And I think that patience is important, whether you're investing in Bitcoin or anything else. It's one of the reasons your house always becomes the best investment you make in your life because you have to hold on to it. You can't sell when you're having a bad day. I think Mike maybe could cool it on the Twitter memes, but the buying, like, you know, whether I agree with it or not, he's obviously not going to stop. So whatever, kudos, I guess. I don't know what else can you say to the guy.
On a different note, I mean, you're just talking about homes. It's come like over here, at least in Canada, like a lot of parts of the world, it should be consumable, something you live in. It shouldn't be an asset that appreciates over time, but it is. And it's kind of skewed. The whole market is skewed. And the housing market's another example of that. But moving on, the royal family of Dubai, their company partnered with Coin Corner, and this is to facilitate Bitcoin transactions in the United Arab Emirates. And this is actually pretty cool. So the first thing that comes to mind when I see this, why isn't Sheikh Roberto being photographed when they're talking about this story? It would have been, it seems like a no-brainer.
Max bidding.
To the moon. So anyways, Coin Corner is, for those who are unaware, they're a global leader in Bitcoin and Lightning Network services. And they partnered up with Seed Group. And this is a company of the private office of Sheikh Saeed bin Ahmed Al Maktoum. Hope I pronounced that correctly. Maktoum, sorry. Buddy's net worth, $37.8 billion as of 2018.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
So this potentially is large. I mean, let's see how this thing plays out. But another partner, we have one of the very important and very rich people from the UAE getting involved. I mean, what does he know that we don't? I mean, number go up. I mean, let's do it, man. Buy it all, man. $37.8 billion. You could easily rival MicroStrategy or more. Quick. They only spent $4 billion on their thing. Like, why not $37 billion? Throw all in there.
Throw a couple in there. Those Sheikh Roberto videos where he's talking about max bidding and going around like pulling over to another guy in the UAE garb who's got a laptop. He's like, I need the computing. Give me the computing. And he plugs it into the miner he's got in the car. Like, I'm getting power from the city. I'm getting power from the government.
He gets the power from the base of the light. How did he tap into that? I mean, not that he had, but he actually opened up the little panel to get the fucking wires. Those are live too, by the way. I hope they're live.
That's so good.
And I guess I got a couple of more stories to knock off my list here. Celsius. I'm not sure if you heard about this one. It's a fucking joke. but they're floating around the idea of they have a $5 billion debt that they're trying to deal with. Well, how they're going to be dealing with potentially, they're going to be issuing tokens, these crypto IOUs. It's truly fiat. It's a truly fiat idea. If it works, all the more power to them, because they duped a whole bunch of people to think that this is going to be a viable solution to their problem. This thing should just go tits up and we never hear of it again. But it's if somebody buys this idea, it is. It is. But you know what? Crypto IOU tokens. Let's see what plays out with that one.
Who except for the people who have lost so much money already, is going to support this? Where are the people who are going to go for this? There's no other people. They're just getting the same people over and over again, are they not?
I would hope so.
There's no way a new person is going to be like, oh, this sounds good. This is where I'm going to put some money. Sign me up for this.
You know, I think
There's no way.
Always a sucker. Last story I want to talk about. I'm not sure if you heard about this. This is actually pretty scary. PayPal, they're closing down the accounts of some organizations they may disagree with. And this is creating some new buzz around the Bitcoin community, even the Twitter community as a whole, that people should boycott and stop using PayPal and try finding alternate means of ways of collecting payment, i.e. Bitcoin. I'm not going to say what they're doing is right or what it's wrong, but it's certainly just opening up eyes to what these centralized bodies are doing, where they could control money, the narrative, where it goes to and where it can't go to. Bitcoin, you can't. It simply goes where it wants to go. As long as you provide a proper address, it gets processed.
There shouldn't be arbiters of moral right and wrong, of moral good on payment rails. Like, what the fuck are we doing here? Same with Visa and MasterCard, like, you know, codes for gun purchases or something like that, or like gun stores in the States. I just don't, everyone knows this is overtly political and it's like the whims of the sort of democratic masses at the moment, but it's ridiculous. Like, people shouldn't be subjected to this kind of behavior, these sorts of, you know, practices. As Marty Bent, AKA Marty Jones, would say, these demons are causing problems, Len. We gotta stop these demons from causing problems. And Bitcoin, for all its shortcomings, is really, really, really good for this sort of decentralized payment network where there is no arbiter of good or bad. It's you know, it's overdue for sure.
We must exorcise these demons. And that's it for these stories. Let's transition to the Bitcoiner and NoCoiner of the week, brought to us by Tahini's. And they have, I think, 50
we
locations.
I gotta find another picture.
We have to at least fucking put it to the top or something.
I'm gonna message Ali and tell him, like, send me the graphics. Maybe I'll get Kenzie to make me something.
Maybe you can record a video for us and we can just always play it every time.
Run the video?
You know, we're gonna be awesome. Let's do it. But anyways, this is brought to you by Tahini's. If you're in Southern Ontario, you have a fucking car, you're within driving distance of a Tahini's restaurant, fucking check it out. You have nothing to lose except for getting a great meal. It's fantastic. I like it. And maybe one day we'll actually have a get-together in one of the Tahini's restaurants, Joey. I can't say for certain, but if we are going to think about a place, maybe Tahini's.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. After hours. Someone's got to bring the beer.
Yes.
who's your – what do you got? NoCoiner or Bitcoiner? You got both?
I got just a NoCoiner. I'm not sure if you have any of the two.
I got both.
You want me to go first or you want to go first?
I'll go first. Okay. My Bitcoiner, because people want to hear you. My Bitcoiner of the week is Jamie Dimon, who got in front of Congress and absolutely curb stomped low IQ Rashida Tlaib when she asked him if his bank would divest from oil and gas companies to meet whatever nonsense net zero carbon, who knows what the hell she was talking about, target. Not only will we not, but that will lead to a road to hell for America. And then she stuttered and stammered through some kind of, you know, vague, empty threat about people who received loan repayment forgiveness, closing their bank accounts with JP Morgan. I thought that was great. Jamie Dimon, my Bitcoiner of the week. And my NoCoiner of the week, Len, Jamie Dimon, who got up in front of Congress and called Bitcoin a decentralized Ponzi. Jamie, your clients are exposed to Bitcoin through your services, man. Come on. Have some consistency, some intellectual honesty would be great. You can't, it's very rare, Len. This is the often thought about but never actually executed NoCoiner and Bitcoiner, the same person, a first on the CBP. So, congratulations.
Yeah, we haven't had that.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. We'll put a picture of you here, surrounded by some kind of like maybe horse manure, and then here, surrounded by gold trim. Bitcoiner of the Week and No Coiner of the Week, Jamie Dimon.
Are you the French president now? Is standing doing a speech or some sort of thing in front of gold trimmed? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what the fuck? You can't steal this. This is his shtick. If you do this, expect to have a lawsuit against you.
I'm the only paisan who doesn't have a gold chain. Okay, I'm not a gold guy. I've got my Timex. This is my Timex. You know, black leather strap. You guys have probably seen me at meetups or on the show wearing my other gold Timex. None of it's real gold. I don't have a gold chain. You're never going to catch me putting gold frills on anything. Unless if Jamie comes on the show, to Boomer's point in the chat, I will put a picture of him behind me. I'll put a picture of him as like Jamie Dimon's head on like a horse's body, like a minotaur Jamie Dimon.
How about just put his head and superimpose that over Putin's head when Putin is doing the shirtless ride up on that horse.
Oh, there goes right? The monetization of this video right out the door. 34 minutes in, a total waste.
Let's do it. So my no coiner of the week, it's some economist named Brad DeLong, and he wrote a piece and it was called Why You Should Be Happy About Inflation and Worried About Something Else. And he's it's incredible that he fucking titled the article at that. And he argues that, it's the start. Having this high inflation is the start of an economic shift, and there will be fewer people working in person. It's going to cause a change in how we deal with retail establishments. There'll be a lot more delivery services and more goods production. And he just goes on and on about this. He talks about this will be expanding new economic sectors and uncovering and optimizing supply chain snags. And he believes that inflation today means less supply chain issues in the future. And that logic should be based on the economic adage that high prices are often the best cure for high prices. Interesting. And the problem is incentivizing sectors that generally, if you do that, you do this at the cost of tax dollars or tax breaks being offered. But either way, there's going to be something lost or taken away from taxpayers and given to incentivize certain sectors. And this does distort markets. And it requires constant manipulation moving forward to ensure that the model doesn't break. And this de-incentivizes other industries that are maybe more profitable, maybe streamlined, or probably are streamlined, and are already established. And these businesses are already generating tax revenues, and they're creating jobs and so forth. So going back, there's nothing good that comes out of higher cost of living, as higher inflation hurts the poor. It squeezes out the middle class. And the rich gets richer as they could afford to buy up assets on the cheap from those who cannot make ends meet. Mr. DeLong, you are not you're an economist, but you're not a psychologist or psychiatrist. You shouldn't be talking to us about what makes us happy. You're not qualified for that, but you are qualified to be my no coiner of the week. And with that, Mr. DeLong, high inflation fucking sucks. So does your idea that high inflation is good for us. And that's why you are my no coiner of the week.
God bless you. What a title, eh? Like, just don't worry about inflation. Worry about something else. Like what? Like what? Give me something else to worry about. What's more important than that for the average person at the moment? Nothing. That's it.
As long as you're closest to the money spigot, you're good to go. Like,
that's the list.
Collect, and everybody else suffers.
All these journals are going to be out of work anyways once things really go south for the Canadian economy, if they do. Anyway, Len, that's all we got. We'll go to the after show here for like maybe 10 minutes. We ran a little late today. I do want to watch the game. And
what game?
It's Giants and Cowboys tonight. Like,
what's
I said,
in the back of the helmet these days?
I don't know. We're not talking about that. Price of Bitcoin in American dollars is $19,282. We got a little bit of a bump there. 19,288 growing up.
Well, going on to in Canadian dollars, 26,396. Yeah, we are going up, but just incrementally, very, very small.
Unreal.
Anyways, That's it for the show. We have on Wednesday
Max Gagliardi's coming on from Ancova and Talking
it's
Energy
Gagliardi,
Podcast.
By the way.
It's Gagliardi. He says Gagliardi.
By Spano, but it's Gagliardi.
Well, you can talk to him about it. He's going to be a great guest. We're going to talk energy, mining, all sorts of stuff that he's got going on. He's a really smart guy. I've been following his stuff for a while. Very much looking forward to having him on. So tune in for that Wednesday, 7 p.m. EST. Here comes the after show. Take care of yourselves.
Take care.